Today's shiur is Masechet Nozah Daf Mem Gimel. We will begin on Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. Aval Tumah V'Tumah Loy, Domeh Tameh V'Kohen. Yesterday we had learned the Gemara Rabba Tap of the Amud had made an interesting distinction. Rabba said that if we know a Nozir is not allowed to become Tameh, and as we said, there's two types of Tumah in contact with a mess. There's what's known as Tumas Magu Masa, touching or carrying a mace, and there's what's known as Tumas Oil, entering the house, the oil, where there's a mace. And Rava told us that if a Nozer became a Tumay mace, and then he becomes a Tumay mace again, he won't get Malkus the second time. But, said Rava, if somebody became Tumay to a mace through Magu Masa, and then he enters a home where there is a mace, oil, he will be tummy. And the Gemara asked the obvious question. Ava tumav tumaloi, if somebody is already a tummy mace, and then he exposes himself again to tumas mace, he won't get a second set of malchus. Why? Domitam v'klaim, he's already tummy. So I asked the Gemara, if that's the case, tumma ubiya nami homitam v'klaim. If somebody has already a tummy mace, and then he enters an oil mace, why does he get a second set of malchus? He's already tamei. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kam b'bayis, kam b'sadon. If a person is holding two pieces of a mace in his hands, even if he picked them up at the exact same time, it's all the same tumah. So he already has a tumas mace. And if he picked up one, and then he picked up the other one, so again, like we just said, he's already tamei. However, says the Gemara, since Tumas Oil and Tumas Maga are two different Tumas, and it's possible, which we're going to spend quite a while trying to analyze how it is, that a person should simultaneously expose himself to both of these types of Tumah, and they're two different Tumas, one's a Tumas Oil, and one's a Tumas Maga, that's why he's chai for both. So what the Gemara is saying is as follows. If somebody first had a Tumas Maga, and then he had a tumas bia, he would not be chayiv, because he's already tamei. The only reason he's chayiv to malchus is because both of those tumas came at the exact same moment, which is not a factor. If the same tumah carrying two pieces of a mace, it's really all one tamei, all one tumah. So our Gemara just taught us a very important concept, that if somebody's already tamei, he can't get tamei again, which is the subject of a big machlokes rishonim. We know that Kohanim, we're going to speak about it later in the Shir Mitzvah Shem, are not allowed to become Tamei only under certain circumstances. But all Kohanim nowadays are Tamei. Everybody's Tamei. So the question is, why can't the Kohen go to a Levaya? He's Tamei. And our Gemara says, once you're Tamei, you're Tamei. So this is actually a subject of a three-way Machlokes Rishonim. The Rambam says that we don't subscribe to this concept of tamei, that once you're tamei, you can't be any more tamei. And therefore, Kayin, even though he's tamei, should not expose himself to further tumah. Rabbeinu Tam says that if a person, indeed, interesting opinion of the Rabbeinu Tam, if a Kayin exposed himself to tumah on a specific day, he says he could become tamei again that day, because he's not really accomplishing, it's not really affecting him, he's already tamei. It's only the next day that he can't become tummy again, because the next day he's extending his tumah. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, if a person is tummy, a kohen is tummy, that day he could still expose himself to tumah. Is there any way tummy today? The Ravid subscribes to the concept that we just learned in the Gemara, that if somebody's tummy, he's tummy. There's no downside to extending his tumah. So the question is, according to Rabbeinu Tam, and certainly according to the Ravid, why can't Kohanim go to Levaya? They're ready tummy. And Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Mishnah Lamelech indeed don't understand why, according to them, a Kohen would not be allowed to expose himself to Tumah nowadays. The Noid of Yehuda, the Chasam Sofer, however, say as follows. Even if the Ravid and the Rabbeinu Tam in his circumstance says that a person's tummy, he can't become tummy again, that's only as far as the Chiv Malchus is concerned. that if he became Tamei, and then he becomes Tamei again, we won't give him another set of Malkus. But even the Ravid, Sari, the Noid of Yehuda Nechsam Sofer, agrees that an Aveira it is for a Kohen to become Tamei. And that's the reason they say that even according to Ravid, Kohanim nowadays may not go to a Levaya. Before we begin the Gemara, which, as I said, what the Gemara is going to try to do is to come up with a situation where the Tumas Maga and the Tumas Oil come at the exact same moment. Rabbi Chanan helps us put the Gemara into perspective. He says as follows. If someone enters a home where there is a mace, he's exposing himself to two Tumas. One is Tumas Maga, because the halacha views a home that has a kezias or more of a mace in it as if it's entirely permeated with tumah. So if I walk into that home, as soon as I walk into the home, I'm hitting tumah. And then there's what we know and we discussed, known as tumas oil, entering the oil of a mace. But there's a very fundamental difference lahalocha between those two tumas. Tumas maga, as soon as I have any exposure to tumas maga, I'm tumah. Tumas oil, most of my body has to be in the oil in order for me to have been exposed and receive a tumas oil. That's the Gemara's question. The bias, if there is a mace in the helm, ki nami, ki even the ayal yode. Usually when a person walks, his hand is a little in front of him. Others say that's the reason people have the hand in front of him, because the hands, why do I go to somewhere? To get something or give something. So if I put my hand into the house, it's stav. Since, as we just explained, the entire house is permeated with tumah, so I right away get a tumas maga. Ki ayil kulei hai tumehu. But then only when most of my body enters the home am I exposed to tumas bias. So what are we saying, that they're both coming at the exact same time? It's not true. The tumas maga comes before the tumas oil. El Amar Rava, says Rava, you're correct. Elamar Belez, I'm sorry. Tzirif Yod Mishum Tumah Ika Mishum Bialeka. If I indeed walked into a home with my hand stretched out in front of me, that's not a case where they come together. The Tumas Maga precedes the Tumas Bia. The case that we're talking about is the Tzirif Gufoy Tumah Ubiya Bahada Dada Kiyasa. Says the case that we're referring to is where a person was careful not to walk with his hand in front of him, but he walked like a soldier with his hands right on the side. So as soon as he walked in, there was nothing preceding most of his body. Ask the Gemara, even if you walk in that way, we all have a nose, and our nose protrudes from our body. But if I walk into the house and my nose is sticking out, so my nose enters the home first, and I have a tumas maga, and only after I, or most of me, enters the home, do I have the tumas oil. So again, how did they come at the exact same time? So ask Tosfos, why don't we say that I walked in backwards? So Tosfos says that walking in backwards, the Gemara says, is not considered a normal way of walking, and a person will not become tamei that way. El Amar Reb Loza, here, when a person puts his hands in first, we have a problem that he has tumas mag before tumas bia. We're talking when a person walked with his head tilted back. And since he's walking with his head tilted back, his nose doesn't protrude. Ask the Gemara, even if he walked that way, we still have a problem. When I walk, my feet stick out. So my feet enter before the rest of my body. So even if I've been successful, that I tilted my head back, and therefore my nose is not protruding, but what I do with my feet. Elam Rapapa. So says Rapapa, what's the only case that we could come up with where a person can have both tumas come simultaneously? I was carried into the house in a box. And while I'm in the box, in a completely enclosed box, I'm not exposed to any tumah. And then this box opens, that's when tumah or biya bahadah dodikos, and both tumahs come at the exact same time, at the opening of the box. So as Moshe Rishonim explained, it's referring to a case that I and my friend open up the box at the exact same moment. And the question is, what do I need to have me participating in opening up the box? So Rishonim answer, I have to participate in opening up the box because otherwise it'll be a lav shem emaisa. If the other person opened up the box and I didn't have any, and I didn't participate, then I didn't do any act. And we know, we learned many times, that you don't get malchus for lav shem emaisa. So the Gemara is referring to a situation that my friend and I opened the box together, and both tumas came at the exact same time. But now the question is the other way around. Why do I have to have somebody else here? Why doesn't the Gemara, that some Sofer asked this question, many Achronim asked this question, why doesn't the Gemara refer to a situation that I opened up the box myself? I'm in a box, in a house, that has a mace in it, and I open the box, and both tumas come at the same time. So Rishonim, so the Mefarshim, Chassam Sofer says a very interesting answer. If two people open up the lid of a box, they can open it up in one opening. And therefore, the two tumas come at the exact same time. If I'm in a box and I'm opening it up, what's going to happen? First, it's going to open a little, and then I'll be able to take off the rest of the lid. For the tumas oil to come, most of the lid has to be open. For the tumas maggot to come, just part of the lid has to open. So we're going to have the exact same problem. So that's why the Gemara was very specific in speaking about a case that I'm in a box and that I and my friend open the box together. Which answers another question. The Yeshua Yankov asks, that why doesn't the Gemara refer to a case that I'm in a house, I'm in this part of the house, and there's a mechitza, and on the other side of the mechitza, there's a mace. And that the mechitza is opened up, and I'm exposed to both tumas at the exact same time. Again, because the same teretz. If we open a mechitza, first it opens a little. So you have tumas maga. Only when most of the mechitza is opened, do we have tumas oil, so the two tumas don't come together. The Brisker Rav points out that why didn't the Gemara give a simple of teretz? The Gemara could have given a teretz that tumas oil also refers to a situation where somebody bends over a mace. So why doesn't the Gemara talk about a case that there's a kazayis mace, and I bent over, so I have a tumas mag and a tumas oil at the same time. Says the Brisker Rav, because of this question, that when we speak about a nazir being chayiv, the lav that we spoke about yesterday, of layavai, the only tumas oil that a nazir is chayiv is for entering the oil hames, not for leaning over a kezayis hames. That's why the Gemara couldn't give this teretz. Rabbi Chaim, the Chazon Ish, ask another question. We said before, we quoted Tosfos. We asked, Tosfos asked, that why does the Gemara say that the person walked in backwards? So the Gemara answered, Tosfos answered, that walking in backwards is not the typical way of walking, and that's why you can't be chayiv. And walking and being carried in a box is a normal way of transporting? So Chazon Ish says, yes, walking backwards is not considered typical. Being carried in a box was very typical. Chazon Ish. Rav Chaim says a very interesting teretz. He says in the name of Rav Simcha Zisa Rieger, who was the Dayan in Brisk. He says as follows. We said earlier that walking in an atypical manner doesn't expose you to tumas oil. Says Rav Chaim, when? If most of your body is exposed to tumah, and it was exposed that you walked in a non-typical manner, then you won't be tumah. However, says Rav Chaim, if all of your body was exposed to the tumas oil, even if it's not in a typical manner, in a box, still, there is no special dispensation because it wasn't in a normal fashion. And here in the box, all of me is exposed to the tumas oil. Another question that the Mishnah Melech and the Shvus Yankov ask is that the Gemara says, the Rambam passes this way, that oil zorik lav shmei oil. That oil that travels, that's not on the ground, it's a traveling oil, is not considered an oil. Where is this relevant lahalacha? It's very relevant lahalacha. If a person is traveling, if a kohen is traveling in a plane, and the plane is traveling over a cemetery, so usually when somebody is in an oil, it's considered that that protects him from being in the tumah. But the Rambam holds that if it's a traveling oil, it wouldn't be considered a protection. And a kohen who's traveling over a cemetery in a plane, in a helicopter, according to the Rambam, has an issue. So here, we're saying that he was in a Shedet Teva Migdal, which protected him from the tumah. It's an oil zarek. So I saw two truths to this question. There are two types of oil zareks. There's an oil zarek that's flying in the air, and there's an oil zarek that's being dragged on the ground. When do we say that oil zarek is loish bei oil? When it's in the air. But the Shedet Teva Migdal is being dragged on the ground. That's not called an oil zarek. Another teretz that I saw is that an oil zarek is not considered a separate oil, but it is considered a chatzitza, it's considered a mechitza. And that's why here, all that's required is a mechitza, it's acceptable. Now the Gemara says, a different teretz. How, again, we're looking how the tumas maga and the tumas oil should come at the same time. Mabar of Ashyama, kigoyin the oil kishugaisis. The nazir entered the home when this person was a geisis. The nafik nishmasei ad yosef. And as this person is sitting in the home, this person passed away. The tumah biba had adadi kasyan. The tumah comes at the exact same moment as the tumah comes at the exact same moment. Both tumahs come at the exact same moment when the person expires. Ask the mefarshim. We discussed just as recently as yesterday that to be chayiv malchus, you have to give asra, and asra can't be asra sofik. So if a nazir is entering a home where there's a geisis, so we don't know that he's doing anything wrong. We don't know that the person's going to die. So why is that considered? How can we give the person a legitimate asra? So some Rishonim say that Al Gemara follows the opinion that asra sofik shmo asra. Others say that since roiv geisisim, most people who are geisim will die, it's considered asra svadai, not asra sofik. But now there's another question that the Mefarshim ask. We just said a moment ago that you're not chayif alav shem b'maisa. So if I'm sitting in the house and this person expires, where's the maisa? So the Mishnah Melech answers, the original walking into the house is considered, since I walked into the house, that's considered the maisa. And with this, we can answer another question. Mefarshim asks, why doesn't the Gemara give an answer? A simple answer. Again, we're looking for these two tumas to come at the exact same time. That I'm sitting in the house, and somebody walked into the house with a kezias mace. And that, and if I was exposed to both tumas at the exact same moment. Answer them, Rav Shainim, because if that's the case, I wouldn't be chayiv. If somebody else walks into the house that I'm sitting in, and he carries in a kezias mace, it's a lashay b'maisa, I couldn't get malchus. Says the Gemara, lei choloi. The pasuk says regarding a nazir, he should regarding a kohen hedget, that he should not be defile his kedusha by exposing himself to tumah. Learns the Tanakama at shishyomus. Only when the person dies is it considered tumah is being given off. Rabbi Omer, the pasuk says b'moisam to teach us the by nazir ksiv. By nazir it says la'aviv l'imay lo yitam lahem b'moisam to teach us at shiyomus. That tumah is, there's no tumah until the person actually dies. So they're both teaching us the exact same halacha. Ask the Gemara, my benayu, is there any practical difference between these two approaches? There's really no nafkamina la halacha. The shlokish amar, there's a very big nafkamina la halacha. Goises ik benayu. Could a kohen enter a home? Could a nazir enter a home where there's a person who's a goises? Lamandam lamei choloi. According to Mandam, it says that you're not allowed to defile your kedusha. I feel a geisus. Walking into a home where there's a geisus is defiling your kedusha. Lamandam b'maisam. According to the Mandam that says we learn from b'maisam, achimamus in, only when the person passes away, at that point, has the kohen, has the nazir done the wrong thing, before that geisus lie. Ask the Gemara, Lamandam malei choloi. The Mandam that learned this thing from my choloi. What's he going to do with the word b'maisam? Says the Gemara Mebai Leilich the Rebbe. He needs that word to teach us what Rebbe taught us. The Tanya Rebbe Omer, The meisim in a matame. A nazar is not allowed to expose himself to tumas meis. Al matame ben negosam bezivosam. He is allowed to expose himself to tumas tzaras and to tumas tziva. Machlokes rishonim. To what degree does this dispensation apply? Some rishonim say that a nazar could only expose himself to the tumas mitzaras and the tumas ziva of a relative. Others say he could expose himself to any mitzayru or azov. Ask the Gemara, well, a mandam of b'maisam, according to mandam, they use the word b'maisam to say that tum is only given off. Tumas mes is only given off when the person dies. Hamabai leil hai svara. Don't we need the pasuk to teach us that a nazar has no problem with tzaras or ziva? Answers the Gemara, if that was the entire point of the pasuk, im kein lemakra b'mais. The pasuk could have used the word b'mais. My b'maisam. Why does the Torah use the word b'maisam? Sham minotarti. One, that tumas mes is only given off after the person dies, and two, that his nazir only has to avoid tumas meis, no other tumah. Ask the Gemara, ulamandam b'maisam, haksiv leichaloi. What's he going to do with the word leichaloi? Answers the Gemara, leman leichala hachadu asa, b'mish enim cholol. When may a kayin not expose himself to tumah if he hasn't defiled his kedusha? Yotazeh, if a kohen is holding a mace in his hand, as we learned in the previous year, he could pick up another kazayas, he's already tamei. Ask the Gemara, ulamandam meicholoi, the mandam that said we use the word leicholoi to teach us that tumas mes is only given off after the person passes away, it's needed to teach us this then. And says the Gemara, in kein lemakra leheichol. It would be enough that the pasuk should say leheichol. My leicholoi, what do we learn from the word leicholoi? Sham minotarti. Two dinim. One is that tumas mes is only given off after the person passes away. And number two, that a kohen who's holding a kazayis meis could hold another kazayis meis. Meisvei, as the Gemara says in a braisa, adam enim matama el achateitza nafshay. A person doesn't give off tumas mes until he passes away. I feel him a guyit, I feel him a geisus. And even if he's a geisus or a maguyit, he doesn't give off tumah. And the Elior Rabbi explains, what's the difference between Meguyit and Geisus? He says, both of them are Geisus and people that are holding very close to death. He says, but a Meguyit is somebody who's in that stage, but he still is lucid. A Geisus is someone who's in that stage, is unfortunately not even lucid. Ask the Gemara, Lamandam Melecholi. According to Lamandam, that said, we learn from the word Melecholi. And that word teaches us that a Kayin can't even expose himself to a Geisus. Haktani, Deinem Etama. Here the Brisa clearly says that a geisus doesn't give off tumah. Answers the Gemara. Linyan tumuyei ad nafka nafshei. Everybody agrees that actual tumas meis is not present until there's a dead person. But here we're talking about a different issue. Linyan eschuli. Has he defiled his kedusha? Hayeschel. Certainly a kayin who walked into a home where there's a geisus has defiled his kedusha. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that a kohen should not enter a home where there is a geisus. The Rama isn't as strong as the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama says that a kohen shouldn't enter such a home. He says that's the right thing to do, but it doesn't say that's strict halacha. There's interesting Pesachei Tshuva. Pesachei Tshuva discusses, may a kohen who's a doctor expose himself to someone who's a geisus. The Shal Sechuva Space Yaakov says that a Kohen doctor may not expose himself to a geisus. The Chassam Sofer is more lenient, and he says that a Kohen who's a doctor may expose himself to a geisus only if he's the only doctor available. But if there are other doctors, he should not expose himself. The Sechuva seems to hold that since this whole tumas of a geisus is not a full-fledged tumah, even if there are other doctors, a kohen who's a doctor may expose himself. There's an interesting rush that says there are two types of geisus. You could have a geisus b'dei shemayim, a person who's nebuch sick, and you could have a geisus b'dei adam, that a person wounded another person to the point that he's a geisus. Says the rush, some sefer finds it difficult, but the rush says that our gemara that says that a kohen may not expose himself to a geisus is only a geisus b'dei shemayim, but not a geisus b'dei adam. And the Chassam Sofer tries to explain the opinion of the Rosh. He says, a Gois is B'nai Shemayim, since it came in a Shemayim, we really can never know how sick the person really is or isn't. And therefore, Kohen, not knowing that he may expire any moment, should not expose. A Gois is B'nai Adam, we could gauge better where he stands, and therefore Kohen may expose himself. There's also an interesting psak from the Shach. We're saying, certainly according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, a Kohen should not enter a home where there is a geisus, and enter a house where there is a geisus. What would be the halacha? You have an apartment building, and a Kohen lives in that home. There's somebody, and he comes at home at night to come to his apartment. During the night, somebody in that house, Rachman al-Itzlan, became a geisus. Does the Kohen have to leave the house? Or since when he entered the house, he didn't do anything wrong, there was no geisus, then nobody will tell him to leave. The Shach holds that the Kohen doesn't have to leave. However, there are other Paiskim that say that if we're learning that a Kohen may not be exposed to geisus, it makes no difference who came first and who came second, the Kohen has to leave the house if there's a geisus in the house. There are geisus in. Says the Gemara. Before we begin the Gemara, just a word of introduction. As we've been discussing, a Kohen may not expose himself to Tumah. Except, says the Torah, in seven cases. There are seven close relatives that a Kohen may become Tumah. Father, mother, brother, sister. Sister depends on her marital status. Son, daughter, and wife. There's Machloikis, Panon, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva. Is it that it's permitted or that it's obligatory? Rabbi Shmuel says it's Rishus, he's permitted. Rabbi Kiva says he's obligated. We follow the opinion of Rabbi Kiva. Shulchan Aruch Pasuk is like Rabbi Kiva. Machloikis Rishonim. What does it mean that a Kohen is obligated? Is it when he's needed to participate in the burying or the preparation for burial of the mace? Or he's allowed to expose himself even if he has nothing to do with the burial? Machloikis Rishonim. Both opinions are cited in the Shulchan Aruch. The minhag olam is that a Kohen, even if he's not participating in any way in the burial, does expose himself to Tumah by these seven close relatives. Says the Gemara, Amar of Chizda Merav, Nikta Rosh Shal Aviv, if the head of a Kohen's father, Rachman al-Tzlon, was decapitated, Einam Tamaloi, then the halacha that a Kohen becomes Tumah to his father doesn't apply. My Tama, Amar Kra, L'Aviv, Bezmanchu Shalem, V'Lev Bezmanchu Chaser. The word L'Aviv, Tupshatim Dachreinim. One is L'Aviv means the entire father, not when he's missing. Or, could have said L'Av. What did it say? L'Aviv, the whole father, not part of the father. Ask the Ritvaz, if we want to give an example of somebody who's not whole, why do we have to give such a gruesome example that his head was decapitated? So, the Ritvaz says three trutzim. All of them relevant la lochel maisim. One teretz he says is, we would think that if there's someone laying here, and his head is here, and his head is the most important part of the body, hopefully, so it's to be considered shalim. So he says, if the head is severed, it's not shalim. Another teretz he says is just the opposite. He says, it's only because the head was completely severed, that's why he's not considered shalim. But let's say it was partially severed, but it's still somewhat connected, he's still considered shalim. But then he says a third teretz, which is very important, la'alokh l'maisa. He says, a shalim or a chaser that makes a difference if a kohen could expose himself is only if the person became a chaser after he died. That means a kohen's relative passed away, and then part of him was removed. But let's say you'll have a situation, says the Ritvaz, and this is the way most Paiskim hold la'aloch l'maisam, where you had an individual, Rachman al-Tzlan, that lost an organ while he was alive. He was amputated, a hand, a foot, whatever. And then he passes away. That's not the case of Chasser. Because since that was the way he was while he was alive, that's not called Chasser. That's why the Gemara had to pick a case where his head was severed. So that only happened after he died. And that's why he's considered a chasser. And it's a machloikis hapoiskim, a very big machloikis hapoiskim, to what this, because the halacha is that a kohen may not expose himself to the tumah if the relative was a chasser. But the question is, what is considered a chasser? And most paiskim, Ramosha, and many other paiskim, follow the opinion that only if he was severed, if something was removed after death. But if somebody had a relative who was missing an organ, and that also does a machloikis, what is considered a chasser? Some say a chasser only means an external organ, and other paiskim say a chasser includes even an internal organ. However, they also, most paiskim seem to say it's only an issue if it happened after death. If it happened before death, then the kohen could become tamei. Omle Rav Hamnuna, ask Rav Hamnuna. Elam ato, ka'azo b'paksa da arvis. If somebody was walking in this dangerous, isolated area, called paksa da arvis, or paska ganve l'reishi, and ganovim list him, severed his head, hocha nami delay metamalei, will the Gemara hold, and if his son was walking with him, he would not be allowed to metamalei to him, he's severed. His head is severed. And the Mefarshim explained, what's the Gemara's question? The Gemara and the Havamina, explained the Mefarshim, hold that a kohen can become tummy to one of the seven relatives we listed earlier, and a kohen can become tummy to a meis mitzvah. And the Gemara and the Havamina assumes that the din of a meis mitzvah is the same din as a relative. So we're saying that by a relative, a kohen can't become tummy if he's a chasser, the same din should be by a meis mitzvah. And therefore, if this would happen, may the son, does the son have to leave the father there? Rachman al son? Amalei? Meis mitzvah karmet? You're speaking about a meis mitzvah? Hash to yesh loim b'achrin b'chayiv. If a kohen comes across a meis mitzvah, who's totally not related to him, we just said the kohen has to bury him, even though he's a kohen. Ba'aviv le'koshke? Certainly his father, who's now a meis mitzvah, laying there in an isolated area, is considered a person that he has to be metam himself. What's pshat in the Gemara's Teretz? Pshat in the Gemara's Teretz is that we should not understand that the tumah of a meis, that a kohen may be metam to meis mitzvah, is the same as the tumah that one is allowed to be metam to one of his relatives. Meis mitzvah is an issue of kavod abrius, to leave this corpse laying on the floor. Terrible. So that's why meis mitzvah have different rules. And even though a kohen, when he's being matam himself to a relative, if the relative is a chasser, he may not be matam himself. To a meis mitzvah, he may be matam himself. Another pshat, same result, but different pshat, is by the father, it says lo'aviv, li'imai. Meis mitzvah doesn't have this qualification. And therefore the Torah is telling us that even if he's not whole, a kohen may be matam himself. However, the Shulchan Aruch does say that even though a kohen is allowed to be matam himself to meis mitzvah, that's only if a significant part of the meis is there. His spine, his skull, chmon otzlan. But let's say a kohen is walking on the road and there's a bone. Just a bone. Not a significant part of the body. That's not called meis mitzvah. Ask the Gemara, for high meis mitzvah who? Is this considered a situation of meis mitzvah? V'tanya eze meis mitzvah. The Brisa says, what is considered a situation of meis mitzvah? Koshein le kaivrim. But there's nobody available to take care of the nifter. Kairim v'cherim, but however, kaira v'cherim einem eisai, if it's a situation where somebody could call for help, ain't there meis mitzvah? V'ha isle bra. Here, since the son walked along, so it's not a situation that there's nobody to help. And there's a rechlekes v'shoinim, which is negel alok l'maisa, how do we view a meis mitzvah? Do we view a meis mitzvah if the meis would have called somebody, he had somebody to get attention? Or does it mean the people around the meis? Here we have both situations. The meis was walking with a son. So why is this considered a meis mitzvah? Answers the Gemara, Kivin the cause of Urcha, Kamisha Ein L'Kavim Dami. There's nobody here. So since there's nobody here, that's why it's considered a meis mitzvah. The son is here himself with no one else to help him. Does Machlaikis have Paiskin? This situation, you have a kohen walking with his father. His father turned into a meis mitzvah. And now the question is, the kohen could hire, let's back up a drop. The halacha is as follows. A kohen is not allowed to be matam himself to someone. And if there's someone who's not a mace mitzvah, who has to be attended to, the kohen should hire someone else. The question here is, and that means, let's explain what I meant, that if, let's say, a kohen has a relative, one of the close relatives, who's a chasser, so he can't be matam himself, but he has to be buried. So what is he supposed to do? He's supposed to hire someone. What would be the halacha, asked the paiskim, where a kohen is walking with his father, who became a chasser, and he's in an area where there's no one else? Is he considered a relative who's a chasser, or is he considered a meis mitzvah? What's the nafkamina? Does he have to hire someone, or can he do the kfur himself? Most paiskim say that he should hire someone. Continues the Gemara. Meisvei lo yitama lo hu matama. If kohen becomes tamei to his sister, ven matama levareah. He may not become tamei, just expose himself to one of her organs. He's now going to become tamei to an organ. What does that mean? My machzul etzim kusayra. What does that mean? Lav lememra de mechas leporta. What the Gemara is saying is as follows: somebody, we should know for such stories, buried his father, and then he realizes that part of the father was missing, and he's allowed to go back to carry the rest. So what do we see from here? That you are allowed to bury, a kohen is allowed to bury a relative who's not whole. And says the Gemara, Hehi Rabbi Yehuda Hi. That represents the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. That Rabbi Yehuda holds that the halacha is that a kohen can become tamei to a relative even if it's not a chasser. Rav Chisda, who said that he may not, represents the opinion of Rabbanan. The Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo metama, Ve'en metama le'vareah, She'en metama al'eva menachai shloviv. A person now can become tamei to an organ, Ametama le'eva menachai shloviv. He is allowed to become tamei to one eva. The machloikis apayiskim, what does Rabbi Yehuda mean? Does it mean lechatchila or b'diavad? Lechatchila is allowed to become tamei to his father when he's missing an organ, or it's only b'diavad? Another interesting machloikis apayiskim is here it says that Eva Menachai is being buried. Is there a chi of kfura on Eva Menachai or not? Ramosha says there's a chi of kfura on Eva Menachai. The Noid of Yehuda says there is no chiv. That means, again, we should never know from such stories, that if an organ was amputated from a living person, Noid of Yehuda says there's no chiv kfura. The only reason we're supposed to bury it is because it does give off tumah, and therefore if a kohen is exposed to it, he'll become tamei. Ask the Gemara another kasha on Rav Chisda. How could you, Rav Chisda, say that there is no tumah by a chaser, that kohen can't become tamei by a chaser, but Tanya Rav Kana, Rav Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, and we know that throughout Shas, whatever Rav Lezer ben Yaakov says is very authoritative. Lo metama, veina metama leverum. Prat le kazayis min a mace. You have a kazayis for a mace. Kazayis netzel. Netzel is the liquefied, if a mace was liquefied. Or male tavid rekev, or if he was turned into dust. Yochel lo yitama, that you now become tamei. Yochel lo yitama le shedra, if you have the spine. Or le gogoylus, you have a skull. Or le roi binyonai, or most of the skeleton. Ulurayv minyamna, most of the bones, 125, the Rishonim say, ksiva mat aleim, hasavlach hakosav tamei acheres. That a kohen becomes tamei, even if you don't have the whole body, just have the, the important parts. Yachal, lo yitam l'shedru l'gayelus, ulurayv minyana shal cheirim. Amart, ma achoysim yuchedesh, shekufet talibay, the brother and sister are connected to each other, umetama l'shedru l'gagaylus l'roi binyana af kol shegufet talibay, any relative who is connected, that means those seven relatives that we listed earlier, umetama l'shedru l'gagaylus l'roi binyana. So here too it says clearly that a kohen is allowed to expose himself to tumah even if you don't have the whole body. The Rakeach speaks, is there machlokes of Yehuda and Blaz ben Yaakov? And he suggests that there is. That according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, a kohen can expose himself to the tumah of a relative when he's a chasser, but he has to have at least most of the body there. According to Rav Yehuda, even for the smallest part, he could expose himself. And says the Gemara, Ahi nami Rabbi Yehuda hi, that brisa with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov represents the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. For Rav, and Rav Chisda, who is quoting the opinion of Rav, holds ki hai tana. Holds like this tana. The tanya ma'aseh shemesh, ovel shal ryutzuk, beginsuk. the father of Yitzchak, who was a Kohen, passed away in Gidzer, or by the deal Achashal Shadim, and they only notified him of his death 3 years later. Or by the Shas of Yeshua ben Leisha, the Dal Zakenim, Shimai, if they can transport the body, the government of his mantra Shalim, you only could expose yourself to your father when he's Shalim, not when he's missing anything. And certainly after 3 years, you're not allowed to expose yourself to that tumah because he's a chasser. Two very important halachas are extrapolated from this Gemara. Here the Gemara says that they wanted to transport the mace 3 years after he died. Under what circumstances, discuss the paiskim, could we move a body? So the best situation is really not to move him. Many paiskim say. But they say that if one does intend to move the body, the following conditions should be met. We should wait for a year until after the Patira. When they bury the mace, a condition should be made that this is a temporary burial. And thirdly, there has to be a very good purpose for moving him, that you're taking him to a family plot. He's being taken to Eretz Yisrael. Most paiskim say a family plot could go either way. A child to a father, or a father to a child. Otherwise, we should avoid moving a mace. But here, we see that under certain circumstances, they did move Niftarim. We also learn from this Gemara another important halachic issue. Here, the Gemara says that this person's father passed away, and nobody told him. And therefore, he only became aware of it 3 years later. And this is the basis for a minig that many people have, that they don't notify relatives, that they don't notify people, that you shouldn't tell people, Maitzi Diba Huksil. Giving over bad news is foolish. Although the Paiskim do say that telling a child, a son, is different, because a son says Kaddish, which is a very important thing for the Nifter, and therefore a son can be informed, but otherwise he should not be informed. I saw two interesting things in this subject. One is, even though we're saying they shouldn't be informed, now Gemara clearly indicates that, but that doesn't allow anyone to lie. You don't have to tell anybody that the relative died, but to say a lie that the relative didn't die when he actually did die, that's not permissible. And then I saw interesting shayla from Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld in the Shayla Tshuva Silmas Chaim. She says, let's say you run a newspaper and you print in the newspaper that this and this person passed away. We're saying you're not supposed to tell the world that somebody died. So how could you report? I guess it's only relevant to religious Jews. How could a religious newspaper print that someone passed away? So he says that, interesting psak, he says when we speak about moitzi dibuk sil, it's only when saying it verbally. But saying it in writing is not considered moitzi diba, and therefore it could be written. He also says that you should only write it about something that everybody is aware of. An important person died, a lot of people attended the levaya, so everybody knows anyway. But if it's something that most people don't know, indeed maybe it shouldn't be disseminated. I didn't give you a phone.